Meng Ling, who'd been with him over the past few days. Skilled, intelligent, and naturally talented, but only starting to grow into herself. She gestured at the buildings around them and over at the makeshift infirmary behind Obi-Wan. "There aren't many guards here, if any," she said. "R2? R2-D2 projected a map, a rotating model of the neighborhood around them, with a red line winding around and forming a large curve to get to a dot. "And the path will take us through the unguarded areas." Mill traced her finger over it, stopping at the bend in the curve. "There may be some activity over here, but I think between R2 and our senses, we can move by it quickly." Several more staccato beeps came from the droid. "They're closing in," Anakin said. "What did he say?" Mill asked.
I'm still learning to understand droid.
"He's picking up patrol chatter that shows activity to the far east of us, over by where the trial took place," Anakin said. Obi-Wan looked over his shoulder, then took a step forward.
"Youngling, how do you know the details of guard locations? Have you tapped into the Neimoidian security network?"
"No, Master, I scouted forward."
She looked up at Anakin, who gave a simple nod of encouragement.
"I have an ability."
"To sense patrol movement?" Obi-Wan asked aloud before his voice dropped to internal musing. "That could be a tactical advantage on the battlefield."
"No, not that. I sense pain. Master Skywalker is helping me learn to control it."
Obi-Wan raised an eyebrow his way.
"I can see the distress of the patients here. They're rescued from the disaster site, or recovering after damage from the bomb itself. Physical pain, or emotions. I give into the force and I see it like you might see heat on a thermal scope."
"Interesting," Obi-Wan said, stroking his beard. Anakin knew the gesture and the tone of voice. Some people would use that word as a polite dismissive, but Obi-Wan only did so when his curiosity sparked.
"Can you soothe them?"
I don't know. I've only tried once on just one patient. But I've noticed a pattern with all of the infirmaries they've set up."
She pointed again to the large tent.
"They're not guarded. It's only medical staff here."
Anakin closed his eyes and reached into the force, sensing the space around them. "She's right. At least here. R2, enhance your audio. See if you can pick up the types of droids." R2-D2 beeped an affirmative, then went silent before turning his dome and chittering at Anakin. R2 says that based on what he knows of droid movements, it sounds like medical droids. No battle droids.
"I don't know if they're giving the patients peace to heal, or if..."
Mill gulped before staring straight at the tent.
"If they just don't care. Like they just get in the way."
Anakin was about to say something about how of course the Trade Federation would treat victims as assets, but Obi-Wan spoke first. "It is not up to us to judge why this is the case. There could be a cultural history in place here. But this does give us an advantage. Youngling," he said, kneeling to put himself on her level, then tilting his head up to meet her eye to eye.
"It is a unique gift. You should embrace it. And I have a challenge for you."
"A challenge?"
"Before we leave Cato Neimoidia, I need to get to the governmental data center and retrieve evidence. It is right next to the largest of these temporary infirmaries."
Obi-Wan looked up at Anakin.
"My friend found it ironic,"
he said, before turning back to Mill.
"Between you and R2, I believe we can get there undetected."
"Then let's get going," Anakin said.
"The quicker we move, the quicker we can get back to the original plan and fly off this planet." The projection from R2-D2 shifted, its rotation stopping to zoom out and show a new location, this time with a green line that followed the same path for about half the journey before turning left instead of right at the bend. "The Force brings us together at the right moments," Obi-Wan said, nodding at Mil. "He's right. Youngling, lead the way, and let's try to stay in the shadows. No more rooftop business for us. Those seeker remotes will be looking. You could just say that we're lucky she's here." "Anakin, you keep believing in luck."
"I didn't say I believed in luck."
He patted Mil on the shoulder, prompting a smile on her face. "But that doesn't stop us from being lucky." Mil set off down the alley with her hood back over her horned head, R2-D2 rolling behind her. Anakin followed, and Obi-Wan kept pace with him. A quick but quiet walk. From the sky, Zara glowed with elegant structures and lush topiaries. In all of the areas that Mil identified, though, it might as well have been the industrial sector of Coruscant. With most of the infirmaries pushed to the outskirts of the bridge city, moving toward the data center proved quite easy. The medical droids and nursing personnel too wrapped up in immediate concerns to care about any detected movement. They'd made it about halfway across R2-D2's projected route when Mil suddenly stopped.
"What's wrong, Mil?"
Anakin asked. She took another step forward, though her hands pressed against her head. He moved to support her weight, and though she tried to push him off, whatever suddenly ailed her plucked at her strength.
"I sense something."
Obi-Wan came up alongside them, soon followed by R2-D2.
"Scan the area for guards or threats,"
he said to the astromech, though he gave her space to breathe. R2-D2 beeped in acknowledgement, then rolled several meters away before a small sensor dish emerged from the droid's round dome.
"Is someone approaching?"
Anakin asked.
"No, but they're nearby. It's fear, suffering, rage."
She pressed her hands against her temples, then began glancing around, each movement seemingly a struggle. She opened her eyes and stared Anakin in the face.
"I can't shut it off. It's so overwhelming that..."
Anakin took her hands but looked around as well. "Is it the infirmary over there?" Anakin said, pointing to the adjacent warehouse converted into a local trauma ward.
"No, I sense them, but this is different. And it's so much that I sense it everywhere. And I think it's just one person. But the pain they're feeling..."
Mil's voice trailed off. But R2-D2 took up the space, beeping fast enough to cause the droid to tilt back and forth.
"A bomb?"
Obi-Wan asked. Light came out of the astromech's optical projector, and a map emerged into existence. A simple red X, marking a location not too far from them.
"Come on,"
Anakin said, picking up Mil. Obi-Wan took the lead, moving quickly with R2-D2 rolling behind him, and Anakin on lookout while carrying Mil.
"Something's not right,"
Mil said, her head leaning into Anakin's shoulder.
"Anakin!"
Obi-Wan yelled from around the corner of a forgotten building. Its doors and windows shuttered with large metal plates. He stood with the open air above, the gray skies of Caetone Moidia casting a pale light over them until Obi-Wan's lightsaber added a tint of blue. He cut a hole with precision, moving the blade in a square without cutting it too deeply. Anakin understood the specific movements. Obi-Wan didn't want the energy of the plasma blade to accidentally set off any explosives. Obi-Wan stepped back, then put his hand out, fingers spread widely, and through the force, he extracted the square-shaped metal slab before dropping it into the empty alley.
"There it is,"
Obi-Wan said before waving Anakin over.
"Does this look like the bombs you found yesterday?"
R2-D2's optic lens rotated, along with the hum and vibration of an active scan. Anakin set Mill down and knelt beside Obi-Wan to look inside the abandoned building.
It does,
he said, his initial hunch confirmed, but studying it closer to be certain. Same orange material. The wiring follows the same design, and the igniter unit is the same. So's the remote signal processor. And the explosive form, it's about the same size. And, Anakin noted, it's still sloppy. But this, he said, gesturing around them, doesn't make sense. The other bombs were all within a radius of the trial. All of those targets meant something to this community. Anakin shook his head, then glanced around for a full view of their surroundings. This is just an abandoned warehouse. It makes no sense.
Ah!
Mill let out, hands to her head. She stood up, pushing Anakin away when he tried to help.
No, I need to fight through this. This person is near, somewhere close by.
Her knees buckled, but she grunted, steadying herself.
I won't let this overwhelm me. I can control this.
A series of quick chirps and whistles came from R2-D2, rapid enough that Anakin put his hand on his lightsaber hilt. How did you disarm this before? Obi-Wan asked. Complete manual rewiring. It takes a little bit of effort. The bomber may not be precise, but they had a good teacher. Keep an eye out, Anakin said, reaching in to remove the bomb from its mounting struts. I need to be careful with this. Gravel ground beneath Anakin's boots as he pulled the device out. Obi-Wan stepped back to give him some space as he set the armed device down on the alley's stone paving. Anakin turned to him, then quickly looked at Mill, who gritted her teeth as she pushed her way to straighten up.
It's coming closer. The anger.
Then I better hurry. But as soon as he leaned over to begin the disarmament, a voice shouted out,
Step away from the bomb, Jedi!
Anakin whirled around, his lightsaber pulling into his hand and igniting in a single move. By then, Obi-Wan's weapon reflected blue across his face as well, but he held out a single hand, motioning Anakin to slow down. And Anakin listened. He eyed the guard standing across the street from them, the young Neimoidian who gave the fiery speech during the trial. Both of his hands held something. The left, a pistol drawn on them, and the right, a small device, finger on the trigger.
Kita,
Obi-Wan said, his voice slowing. Enough people have been hurt. Put the detonator down and let's talk.
You won't get through to him, Mill said. He's in a state of rage. I can feel it.
Anakin looked at the space around him, searching for vulnerabilities. Despite being more ordinary and in slight disrepair, many of the surrounding structures were still the rounded designs typical of the culture's aesthetics. But in terms of immediate help, the environment provided no tricks. It would just take speed, a burst to rush over and slice the detonator. Or he could push Kitar down with the force, hopefully knocking the detonator out of his hand, or pull the detonator as he would any object on the ground. Those all came with the same risk. If Kitar realized what was happening, his thumb would hit the button and set off the bomb. A thought crept into his mind, one that he pushed out as soon as it arrived. If he had Count Dooku's mastery over lightning, one zap would likely be enough to shock Kitar fast enough to knock him out and safely free the detonator.
Anakin, let me talk to him,
Obi-Wan said under his breath, as if he knew that Anakin was already considering ways to rush him. You heard Mill. You're not getting through to him right now.
I'm going to try. Give me a chance.
Anakin nodded, letting Obi-Wan do what he did best. But he didn't like the odds, or have the patience required to let this play out. Obi-Wan's lightsaber retracted, and he put both hands up.
You see, Obi-Wan said, we are calm. We are here to talk. I spoke of good faith before, and I intend to keep it.
From the side of his mouth, he spoke quietly. Disarm yourself. I hope you know what you're doing, Anakin said, drawing his plasma blade back into its hilt.
Kita,
Obi-Wan said. Were those your bombs around the Grand Theater of Judgment?
You,
he said in a low, icy tone. He stared at Anakin. You must be the one from the communicator. Did you take my bombs?
That was me, Anakin responded.
Still couldn't figure out why you picked those targets.
I don't know, I thought that was some nice architecture.
Some of the finest in our culture's history, he said, his voice seething.
Master, Mill said, you're pushing him. I don't know if this is a good idea.
Look at you. Look at the way you mock us.
The same as long as I can remember, the way the Republic treats Nemoidians, the way they treated generations of my family. Why would I destroy pillars of Nemoidian culture? Because then, the Republic might finally see we are more than asset traders. Because they would see, his voice rose, the smoking remains of everything the Jedi Emissary blew away.
I guess he was framing you, Anakin whispered.
Obi-Wan nodded, then turned to the young guard.
Kita, he tried again. I understand your grievances against the Republic. You're not wrong, but please listen to the evidence. We did not cause the catastrophe on Kheta Sura. You can help us. Roog trusts me. You can trust me too.
Don't speak about my partner. You've corrupted her.
Obi-Wan took a step forward, hands up as he tried a different tactic.
You can take the lead on the investigation of my evidence, he said, specifically omitting Roog from that detail. You could be a hero to both the Republic and the Separatists. Your actions could be the one thing that drives the galaxy to peace. You want to help your people. You want to help the Trade Federation. This is your opportunity. Please work with me and take it.
Obi-Wan looked over at Mill.
What are you sensing?
He asked under his breath.
Anguish. Confusion. He's still very angry.
But you've enough chatter between you. Stop plotting against me. I am in control here.
A discharge came from his pistol, and Anakin reached into the Force to project out its trajectory and final landing spot. A warning shot with no target. He let it fly past them, and Obi-Wan similarly didn't move. It seared into the building's wall, leaving a black pockmark, debris crumbling to the ground.
Yes, Kitar, Anakin said. This is your show. You're in control.
Don't speak of Roog anymore. I know all about your Jedi powers.
Roog has made her own choices, Obi-Wan said. I have not influenced her at all.
Then she is a traitor to Nemoidians everywhere.
Kita,
Obi-Wan said, trying to reframe the discussion.
Listen to me. No one has to know about the bombs you planted. No one has to know about this bomb right here, next to this infirmary.
Though no one said it, Kitar's plans suddenly connected in Anakin's mind. If this was all about framing Obi-Wan for disrespecting the Nemoidian people,
then the targets would all be things that mattered to their culture and community, rather than to the Trade Federation as an organization. Buildings and statues of cultural significance and the unguarded wounded. These bombs can be erased from history, and instead, you can be the one who said that you wished to take the first step toward peace. Use my evidence, I beg of you. You can be the hero the galaxy needs right now. This will give you everything you want. Greater recognition of the Neimoidian people, a resolution to the greatest crime Cato Neimoidia has ever seen, and vindication for your family bloodline.
Another good speech, Anakin whispered. And though Kitar probably couldn't see it, Anakin caught the corner of Obi-Wan's mouth curling upward.
Something's happening to him, Mill said. His emotions are like a cloud of different colors.
Now's my chance while he's distracted.
Anakin glanced over at Obi-Wan, who remained still.
He's unstable.
Kitar slowly slid the pistol into his hip holster, a gesture that got all of their attention. But the detonator still sat in his other raised hand. That part didn't change. His free hand went up to the side of his helmet. Details remained too quiet to hear, but someone talked into his ear.
Someone's on his comm, Anakin said. I should take him now.
I hope it's Roog, Obi-Wan whispered. No, he's still got the detonator. One move and he blows it up. We're not that fast.
Whoever called Kitar finished, and the guard reaffirmed his stance, red eyes wide. He took a step toward them as he drew his pistol back out.
You claim I would be a hero, he said. But bringing the Trade Federation closer to the Republic would make me a traitor. We will not be forced under the thumb of Republic rule.
Ventress told me all about you, Jedi. The way you manipulate people.
The way you control their emotions. I've already seen what you've done to Roog. How you twist the truth. How the Republic gives you free rein to do as you please. I said it at the trial, and I will say it here again. No more. You tried to hide your crimes. I will make that impossible.
Ventress,
Obi-Wan said, a rare curse under his breath before returning to full volume.
The spirit of cooperation is necessary for galactic peace. We must come together to stop this outside group that has unleashed havoc on your homeworld. Please look at my evidence. The Republic is not to blame here.
You're wasting your time.
His voice took a grim turn, and his fingers flexed around the pistol grip. He looked up with a startling, unblinking clarity in his red eyes.
You don't understand.
Oh, no,
Mills said with a gasp.
I don't care who bombed Katasura.
His words combined with growing fury.
I don't know, and I don't care. That was never the point.
The only thing that matters is what happens now.
The Republic has looked down on Neimoidians for far too long. Neutrality is not the path here. The only way to save my people is for them to join Count Dooku's movement. Count Dooku will save the galaxy. He may speak highly of your order, but he also understands the true nature of things.
Anakin could feel Obi-Wan's burn at the last sentence, a clear indicator that yet another variable was in play. Ventress has been in your ear as an agent of Count Dooku. Give me the same amount of time you've given her. I offer you only words. Anakin put his hand on his lightsaber hilt just in case.
He's too far gone. Whoever spoke to him on his comm, it's pushed him over the edge,
Mill said, stepping behind Anakin.
It was Ventress. She's manipulating his idealism.
Perhaps we should run. Escaping the blast radius is our only chance,
Obi-Wan whispered.
You pick up the youngling.
R2 will need to use his rockets. There has to be another way. The infirmary. We have to save them.
Anakin grabbed at the Force, slowing down everything around him to seek some solution that might save everyone. The best thing he could think of was a coordinated Force pull. Two at the same time from him and Obi-Wan. One on Keetar himself to yank him forward, and the other on the detonator. That might get it out of his hand cleanly enough for him to...
No more words!
Keetar yelled.
Step away from my bomb!
Or he could turn and sever the bomb's wires in one lightsaber swing and hope that was enough. He knew what wires to pull. This would be less precise than the other bombs, but the Force would guide him. Obi-Wan would take care of the rest. Anakin, we must run. The blast radius is set, but if we survive, we can get to the data center and show the evidence to the Republic.
No. I'm coming up with a plan. We're going to save everyone.
This is war. In war, there are impossible choices. We must get the evidence to the Republic.
I tire of your stalling. Get away from my bomb.
Something shifted in Keetar's stance, as if he'd reached some kind of epiphany.
No, it doesn't matter.
A new steadiness came to his voice.
I don't need to survive this.
He's calm now, Mill said. Like something turned off all his emotions. All his colors went dark.
That's not good, Anakin said. He put his hand up, the Force acting as an extension of his own hand. He just about felt the detonator through the ether when a crackle popped from high above, cutting through the air like thunder.
Chapter 45. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
The detonator dropped from Keetar's hand and bounced off the ground. A blaster bolt fired with enough velocity to burn a complete hole in the palm. Keetar looked at his hand, his red eyes growing even larger, when another shot rang out. The guard buckled, one leg suddenly giving out, and he collapsed to the ground, howling in pain. Obi-Wan looked up and behind them, the remnants of the burst still echoing across the sky.
Did you plan this?
Anakin asked, the fallen detonator flying into his open palm. A second later, Keetar's pistol took flight, landing in Anakin's other hand, though he quickly tossed it aside. He turned, searching the surrounding buildings, and he'd moved to grab his lightsaber before Obi-Wan gestured to pause him.
No,
Obi-Wan said, scanning rooftops for Roog's presence. I believe this was more of that good faith I talked about, in the face of an impossible choice. Where was she? Obi-Wan tried the most logical direction based on the way the blaster bolt arrived, a specific angle and speed. He found no traces, though after several seconds, his ears picked up the clomp of footsteps over rooftop metal. Each clang gave away the location. Someone was running at a clip that would make even Jedi envious, despite the lack of Force abilities. You should disarm that bomb.
On it, Anakin said.
How are you, youngling?
He's hurt, she said, but that rage is fading.
Obi-Wan nodded, his hand instinctively going to his beard as he thought through his options. It didn't take long for the footsteps above to turn into a series of huffs and thumps, and then he finally located Roog. Sniper rifle strapped to her back, she climbed down a series of ledges before attaching a grappling hook to the side of a tall, curved wall and rappelling to the surface. The hook retracted its claws and caught up to her as she slowed down, taking in the scene. Jedi to her right, a wounded Keetar to her left. Obi-Wan walked up to the Neimoidian commando.
There's another bomb. My apprentice, fellow Jedi is disarming it.
Did you know about the series of bombs Kitar planted? Only what was discussed here. His hate for the Republic runs deep, and it has been stoked by Dooku's agent. Rug nodded and looked up. She's close. I saw her ship. I believe she was in coordination with Kitar over comms. They both turned to look at the fallen guard, quietly writhing in pain. The heat from the blaster bolts must have cauterized the wounds, much like a lightsaber, as little blood oozed onto the ground below him. Kitar looked up, and through the pain of his wounds, he tilted his head and focused on Rug.
Traitor!
He yelled, spit flying with his words. Rug took steps forward toward her partner, but paused and looked back. This is your call, Obi-Wan said. Unless you want the Republic to be involved.
No.
I own this. I wasn't there for him. Ventress was. Rug's normally inscrutable face broke, regret appearing in the form of narrow eyes and a tight jaw. What have you done, Kitar?
Traitor!
He yelled again.
People like you will be the end of our kind!
I hope this is Ventress speaking, not you. All of Rug's talk of tough decisions, killing for her government, and her brutal commando life seemed to exhaust her. But here, one simple sentence from Kitar cracked her stoic exterior, working its way past any defenses until she simply stared at her fallen partner silent.
She has shown me the path! She promises that Dooku will not exploit Namordians like the Republic has!
Obi-Wan wished he could show Kitar what Dooku had said on Geonosis, how underneath the eloquent words and welcoming smile came deceptions both subtle and overt. But he respected Rug enough to leave this to her. Think this through. How do you know he will keep his word? She asked, kneeling down. Obi-Wan watched as she tried to reach him, as if logic might break through where empathy failed. Even if he does, how do you know that everyone underneath him will as well? The Separatists are an evolving organization filled with competing priorities, including Newt Gunray. Their future is uncertain.
So you throw in with the Republic? With the Jedi?
Rug paused, then looked back at Anakin and Mill as they worked on the bomb. The Jedi tried to help our people. You tried to murder them. That's unforgivable. There's no possible justification for this. Regardless of what Ventress told you, you planted the bombs. She pointed at him. As Cato Nemordia mourned, you made that choice.
I tried to save our people, while you collaborate with the enemy.
No. Rug's posture changed, the pain of earlier now turning into an anger that tensed her shoulders and balled her fists. I find this Jedi to be honest, and I'm willing to listen to honest people. But I will always carry the best interests of Nemoidians.
You have sold out your people.
This bomb would have murdered civilians!
Keep telling yourself that. Take the easy way out!
Kitar spat at Rug's feet, the glob a mix of saliva and blood.
History will remember you as a traitor. Finish it! Kill me now! Complete your betrayal! What are your...
Kitar's diatribe ended with Rug sending a fist into his face. We're not changing each other's minds. She stood up, that split-second gesture marking the difference between her and Obi-Wan. He would never have given in to an impulse like that, even if knocking out Kitar had a practical purpose. Anakin, on the other hand...
Do you judge me?
She asked, eyes locked with Obi-Wan's. That question tied into many different outcomes, and he weighed the possibilities the way each might ripple out.
You are in a position that I cannot fully appreciate. These are your decisions to make. However, he said, if you need any assistance, you may ask, from the Republic or from myself, as a friend. He turned to check on Anakin, who still worked on bomb disarmament.
He has identified me as a traitor. And...
She inhaled slowly.
I suppose I am. I aided a declared enemy of the state. And he knows it.
She took several steps closer to him.
He is the only one that knows it.
Roog, Obi-Wan said, consider your options.
Carefully. If I finish the job, I have his confession recorded. He will be rightfully blamed for the bombs. Perhaps that will further the discussion on extremism.
She looked at Obi-Wan.
And further your push for negotiations. It only supports your argument.
You will murder your partner, though.
Oh, I've killed so many. In combat. Up close. On a mission. Collateral damage. Accident. The guilty. The innocent.
Roog's gloved hands pushed against the sides of her face.
It doesn't make a difference, Al. I've taken their lives. What's one more? Especially if it de-escalates the war.
This was not Jedi business. Obi-Wan's mandate was to investigate the bombing, and if he could, to persuade the Trade Federation into opening negotiations with the Republic. The conflict between Roog and Keetar lived in a bubble exclusively their own, especially with Keetar's bombs nullified. Somewhere, perhaps Ventress watched with interest. But Obi-Wan suspected her as the type whose words pushed her own agenda forward, regardless of who got caught up in them. She likely didn't care if Keetar lived or died.
I taught him. I mentored him. And I hoped to temper his rage by showing him how we do the work. I underestimated Ventress.
The toe of her boot dug into the ground.
Or perhaps I overestimated how much he listened to me.
Obi-Wan intentionally stayed quiet. Her words didn't invite an opinion, and in this case, letting her talk it through might bring her to a better conclusion. She knelt over Keetar's prone body, his eyes closed above his wheezing breath. She focused on the wounds she'd created moments ago, from the sniper rifle she described to Obi-Wan as an extension of my own body while they worked together on the surface. Did that mean she felt every visceral impact that her weapon caused? From across the way, Obi-Wan heard Anakin talking to Mill about the bomb, though they kept a respectful distance. Roog remained still, only blinking as she stared at her fallen comrade. Seconds ticked by, fingers turning into a shaking fist at her side, until one hand brushed the pistol holster on her belt.
This is how it's going to be,
she said. And Obi-Wan waited. Her hand hovered, fingers flexing over the weapon, her long gloved forefinger tapping against the grip.
I might regret this, but we're here now.
Her pupil slits sharpened into focus.
And I can't change anything.
Her hand moved and Obi-Wan took in a sharp inhale. It reached past the holster, shifting farther to the back of her utility belt, before pulling out standard issue energy binders, the same kind she'd placed on Obi-Wan not too long ago.
I need a med pack,
she said with a heavy sigh. As she cuffed Keetar's limp hands, she inspected his wounds more closely.
The path to Neimoidian prosperity is through peaceful negotiation, not bloodshed. We know this. Our brains are wired to calculate this.
Obi-Wan reached into his own belt for a small tube of emergency Bacta.
This cycle of violence must end, she said, taking the Bacta from him and applying it on the burn damage on Kitar's hand and knee. He's lucky we're next to an infirmary.
Rug, Obi-Wan said, helping her turn Kitar onto his back. I still believe we have a chance for de-escalation. We need to get to the data center and download the evidence of Separatist involvement. Then show the Republic that someone is clearly playing both sides.
I can help you,
she said, pulling on Kitar's arm before lifting him over her shoulder. They walked in step, Obi-Wan letting her lead the way back to Anakin, Mil, and the bomb.
Are all of Kitar's bombs disarmed?
We got most of them yesterday. Only this one's left. But I'm almost done. It's safe and stable. I just need more time to disable it.
Rug looked at the trio of Jedi surrounding her, and on her shoulder, Kitar groaned.
The data center itself has layers of guards. I'll need to use that bomb as a distraction.
No, Mil said. No more suffering for political gain.
A smile crept over Rug's face, perhaps at the idealism on display here.
Youngling, your friend trusts me. You should too.
She gestured at the bomb's explosive material.
I'll use a fraction of that on an environmental scanner about a kilometer from the data center. It's uninhabited and isolated, but our security is on high alert. That should pull a number of guards from the building to inspect. I'll call it in myself.
What about Kitar?
I'll drop him off at the infirmary and tell them to sedate him that he's under arrest. If, no, when he comes to, he'll identify me as a traitor. I don't know what will happen then.
But,
she said, adjusting the unconscious Nemordian on her shoulder.
Hopefully, you'll be off-world by then.
Chapter 46. Anakin Skywalker.
This was Anakin's specialty. He dashed forward, moving with stealth and speed. If Mil and R2-D2 hadn't been with him, even if Obi-Wan hadn't been with him, he'd have gotten there in half the time. Mil's hunch that the infirmary neighborhoods were lightly guarded proved to be completely accurate, and R2-D2's constant scans confirmed that patrols clearly focused on the immediate area around the governmental offices. When the data center was within reach, he paused only to check with Mil.
I'm okay, she said. I'm fine.
Are you sure? Obi-Wan says that this is the largest infirmary.
Mil straightened herself after a brief pause to catch her breath.
If I can handle Kitar, I can handle this. Besides,
she said, marching with a confidence that may have been for show,
I'm beginning to find that it's not their suffering that slows me down. It's that I want to help them.
Hold on to that, Anakin said. The way you care about others will power you through adversity.
From the corner of his eye, he caught Obi-Wan shooting a second glance at this, though he quickly marched forward, eyes focused on their destination.
That's the environmental scanner Rug mentioned,
Obi-Wan said, pointing to a thin tower with equipment sticking out of a collection of buildings. And that's the back entrance where she's supposed to meet us. They overlooked a plain domed structure with a short cylindrical stack on top, the only decorative flourishes being the statues in the front courtyard. There were equal numbers of guards at the front and back loading areas. To the side sat five massive tents, medical droids hauling the occasional cart back and forth between them. The sky flashed before a plume of smoke went up at the scanner. They all turned to see one of its supporting legs collapse as the tower imploded, the equipment at the top falling straight down.
That's our cue, Anakin said.
Rug's distraction worked. Most of the guards surrounding the building took off, and a number streamed out of the building as well. They leapt down, staying among alleys and side streets to circumvent the infirmaries. As they passed by the final tent, Mill took in a breath. Anakin turned to her, though they kept moving. Are you all right, Mill?
I was wrong, she said.
But unlike other times when her abilities seemed to take the air out of her, she remained steady on her feet.
I thought they'd left the infirmaries unguarded because they didn't care. But it's to give the patients a more restful space. Their culture cares deeply about their sick and wounded. It's not something that the outside observer would see.
You got all that from walking by them?
I sense them a little differently here, Mill said.
They stopped, Obi-Wan peeking around the corner before signaling them forward.
All the other infirmaries are free of guards. This one has some close by. They seem to tense up when they're around military. And the guards are mindful. I think it's that risk calculation you told me about.
She turned to Anakin, her eyes clear.
They care about their people, especially in a time of mourning. I don't know about the Trade Federation, but Nemordians care about their people.
Anakin nodded, but he only had a few seconds to take in her epiphany before Obi-Wan waved them ahead. Perhaps they'd all made the mistake of lumping the population in with the government. Obi-Wan led them to the side of the dome, an area with significant tree cover, before vaulting upward on it, using force-assisted balance to scale the curved side. Though Mill moved more slowly than the adults, she proved to be a capable climber, keeping pace with R2-D2 boosting next to her. Rook says this is the area with the least cam coverage, Obi-Wan said as they made it up to the top ledge. From where they knelt together, the lone guard on the backside appeared to be no more than an insect standing its ground. Though the local faux emergency drew out the rest of the office workers as well. They scattered, looking like dots moving on a board from their distance. Though another one emerged from the opposite side, dashing inward instead of away.
There she is.
Obi-Wan adjusted his balance on his heels, then pointed to the top cylindrical structure. Anakin nodded, then led the way to the roof hatch, where Roog would let them in undetected.
Welcome to the Governmental Data Archive,
Roog said, waving them inside. She toggled the button again on the device in her hand, an orange translucent beam bursting outward. She'd done the same on their way in, to create a rolling window of disabled surveillance.
If I wasn't getting arrested for treason before, any records of me doing this will surely get me the brig.
You're doing this for the right reason,
Obi-Wan said with a nod.
Mill, can your abilities monitor the outer hallway for movement? If I really concentrate, Master, do it.
Alert us if anyone starts coming toward us.
Obi-Wan looked at Roog, who nodded in return.
We can't be too cautious.
R2-D2 rolled in and immediately chirped about looking for an access port.
Here,
Anakin said, tapping on a knee-level port built for astromech droids. The screen above came alive with lines and lines of text that at first showed what he assumed to be Pac-Pac, but several seconds later all the text flipped to Aurabesh characters. Roog stepped over, swiping at the screen and drilling down through various folders until she tapped at two sets of files.
This is it, she said. Bring these to the Republic. Any copies self-delete within a standard day for risk mitigation. That's why my source had to slice directly into the archive. If you're going to transmit it, you need to send it now, and the receiver will have to capture it securely.
R2-D2 beeped an affirmative, and a download bar appeared on the screen, incrementally filling from empty to full.
Do you wish to present it yourself to the Republic?
Obi-Wan asked.
We can grant you amnesty. You will be protected. Perhaps you can even lead the negotiations with the Trade Federation.
I promise you, nothing would happen to you,
Anakin said, and inside he felt the Sun Dragon roar, the way it always did in the furnace of his heart during these circumstances. When anyone showed loyalty to Anakin Skywalker, they became an ally for life. And if they ever betrayed him, that intensity would immediately invert into something much more dangerous. Rug looked back and forth between the two Jedi Knights, then at the youngling, who suddenly seemed capable beyond her years, despite the fact that she didn't even have her own kyber crystal yet. Anakin knew Rug's answer simply from the look on her face. "I love my home world," she said, turning to the screen above R2-D2. "I love my people. I've done so many terrible things on their behalf because I believe that they are worth it. You're right. I could go with you to Coruscant and become a negotiator. But my place is here. I've spent my life fighting on the inside for Neimoidians. Perhaps not always for the Trade Federation, but for my people. Whatever happens to me, I will continue that fight." Anakin looked at Obi-Wan, who merely nodded.
"We understand," he said, extending his gloved mechanical hand. "If you ever need us, you have friends in the Republic."
Obi-Wan had been right about her, and for that he was grateful. For that, he would fight for her. Strange that he felt that, even for someone who was Neimoidian, who had worked for the Trade Federation. The epiphanies that only came with experience settled in. His own deeply held beliefs that formed early, gradually reframing into a whole new perspective. Rug took his hand, and through the glove and synthetic sensors, he felt the warmth and weight of hers against his. Of the many species he'd encountered across his entire life, it dawned on him that he'd rarely stood this close to a Neimoidian before, despite how much they influenced the direction of his life. A chime came from the archive, and R2-D2 dislodged from the terminal. The droid backed up before his dome slid open, a small sensor dish elevating upward. Rapid beeps came along with an electronic groan, one that the astromech usually saved for frustrations.
"What's with the droid?" Rug asked.
"Transmissions to Coruscant are jammed. A leftover from the rules of my stay."
"R2, Obi-Wan said. "Is there anything you can do to delay the self-deleting files? Perhaps rolling copies of copies?"
Before R2-D2 could respond, Anakin put a hand up.
"We may not need to do that. R2, can you transmit to a ship traveling to the mid-rim?"
One affirmative whistle later, and suddenly Anakin felt stronger, more capable of defeating any obstacle. Thoughts about Padme combined with a rush of adrenaline greater than any spice or drink combination could achieve.
"I'm friends with a senator we can trust."
Obi-Wan's head tilted sideways. Anakin knelt down in front of R2-D2, quickly reciting memorized details about connecting to secure comm channels, something that he held on to as tightly as the hand of his wife, because in some ways, those letters and numbers held their marriage up across the stars.
Chapter 47, Obi-Wan Kenobi. There was a brief moment in the relationship between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Qui-Gon Jinn when the apprentice went behind his master's back as he searched for his true path forward. A brash young Padawan at the time, so insistent on following the Jedi Code that he bristled at Qui-Gon's hesitation regarding a treaty with the unscrupulous Zerka Corporation and the planet Pygel. Hesitation created by Qui-Gon's own moral compass. In the end, years later, Obi-Wan understood his old master's objections. Something where balancing right and wrong, good and bad, failed to produce a clear outcome. He was pretty sure that Anakin's defiance of the Jedi Code right here did not fall into the category of moral compass, because Anakin didn't acknowledge it or defend it. He did, however, fail miserably at hiding it. Obi-Wan sensed everything as soon as Anakin said mid-rim.
In circumstances like this, he usually prefaced any conclusions with questions, internal or otherwise, and allowed things to fully play out. But in this moment, he didn't need to. The surge of emotion that came with those words was enough for Obi-Wan to understand the situation. And it had little to do with the strategy for transmitting the data to the Republic or the possibilities of Rogue's decisions. Everything here connected to thoughts about Padme Amidala, the way that Anakin managed to steer the mission over to her. Was that his intention this whole time? Or did he take advantage of the situation whenever he could? Or perhaps it was a mere coincidence that Padme really was the best choice here. She was accessible, and securing a trusted transmission route to Coruscant was the top priority. R2-D2's projection lamp lit up, and the glowing figure of Padme Amidala appeared. Despite the bright colors of the hologram, her exquisite purple dress's finely detailed copper embroidery was still distinct. But Padme herself presented more casually, with curly hair down, no overcoat, and only a simple gold pendant with a metallic spiral design.
Annie, it's...
Though the image stood only as tall as a lightsaber hilt, her transformation was clear. Her head tilted slightly, as if identifying the people standing around Anakin flipped a switch.
Master Skywalker,
she said, her voice shifting into formality.
Senator Amidala,
Anakin said, returning the professional tone of her speech. Obi-Wan chose not to look directly at Anakin, instead judging his reactions and expression through a distorted mirror on a reflective piece of metal from the data center's console. But even though Anakin spoke in a low monotone, his mouth kept fighting a smile, and his eyes failed to hide anything. We have urgent data to send to you. We are at a secured location on Cato Neimoidia, and transmissions to Coruscant are blocked.
Senator,
Obi-Wan said, keeping up the guise of formality for the conversation.
This is self-deleting data. You will need to capture it in permanent form, then transmit it to the Jedi Council for analysis. We believe this information can be vital to de-escalating the war, and perhaps convincing either the Trade Federation or the Separatists to enter negotiations.
He looked at Rogue before continuing.
Perhaps both.
C-3PO stumbled into view.
Oh, Master Anakin and R2-D2. Among my capabilities is the ability to capture image or text data into a permanent format capable of download by any standard secured Republic system. Though I usually use this for translation of memos sent in non-basic languages as they are streamed in transmission, it can be applied here. It may require...
Thank you, 3PO. Yes, Master Kenobi, we can handle this information.
Anakin began explaining the technical aspects of what they needed, which got the practical part of the job done. But his feelings were clear, so much that Obi-Wan didn't need to watch the reflection to sense them. Being in the room was enough. Despite how they dressed up their words, Padme's reactions broke enough from her usual stoic formality to inform the situation. Her gift for disciplining herself in the name of diplomacy, exhibiting a hairline fracture in front of them. Up close, their bond became clear even as they tried to hide it. For the uninitiated, that deception would have worked. But he knew Anakin well enough to read his every movement. That, in turn, reflected on Padme. Another epiphany soon dawned on Obi-Wan. It also reflected on himself. For all the stubbornness, the arguments, the subtle disdain that they sometimes had for each other, a new form of Anakin was emerging. Something more authentic and human coming through since his promotion. Their conversation still manifested as competition, but rather than trying to step on each other, they'd made a subtle turn to verbal one-upmanship. All it took was leaving behind the bond of master and apprentice. For a moment, Obi-Wan's mind drifted from the mission,
a volley of relentless questions whipping through. Was Anakin like this because Obi-Wan tried too hard to live up to Qui-Gon's dying request? If he had been more like Qui-Gon and less like what he thought a Jedi mentor should be, would Anakin have such defiance in him? As Anakin and Padme oversaw the data upload, Obi-Wan finally identified the strange feeling in him, something so rare and foreign that it took a barrage of questions and the weight of self-doubt to recognize. Regret. Qui-Gon had occasionally revealed his own questions and insecurities, even turning down a seat on the Jedi Council to remain Obi-Wan's teacher. Yet did it ever coalesce into something quite like this? But, as he'd been trained since he was a youngling, Obi-Wan let the feeling go, allowing it to evaporate into nothing, rather than stifling it down into a scar that might fester. He faced new questions as he watched the subtle exchanges between Anakin and a holographic Padme, the way the young Jedi Knight allowed a smile to break through over something as benign as 70% uploaded, the way the former Queen of Naboo held her gaze much longer than she should have, and the way Anakin's feelings radiated outward, as if his heart were a sun heating the entire data center. What might he learn from this moment? About Anakin, about himself, about their time as master and apprentice, about how things needed to move forward, one way or another. The last few days only reinforced Anakin's overwhelming willingness to simply care. That caring someday might make the difference between life and death, a right decision and a wrong decision stemming from a mere blink of emotion. Earlier that day, the situation with Keetar would have been vastly different in a matter of seconds. In war, seconds might define the fate of the galaxy. The status bar on the screen crept to full before flashing several times as confirmation.
I see it, Padme said. 3PO and I will begin processing it.
We'll contact you once we're off Cator Neimoidia, Anakin said. This time he angled himself away from watching eyes, though his reflection gave away that he'd saved a soft look for the Senator.
Understood, Master Skywalker,
she said, an intentional monotone, worthy of her time as Queen of Naboo under all of the makeup and headdresses. Her image faded away, and R2-D2 disconnected from the terminal with his usual chatter.
That's right, R2, Anakin said. Let's head out.
Wait.
Roog held up a hand, the surveillance blocker in her palm. There's something I need to do. She pulled the sniper rifle off her back and lodged it into her shoulder with her other hand, her thumb flipping a switch on the side. Servos and actuators whirred inside the weapon, the barrel withdrawing to a length of a standard action rifle.
What is this?
Anakin said, his instincts getting the better of him. The young Jedi's blue lightsaber came to life, its glow filling the dimly lit archive.
Wait,
Obi-Wan said.
Lower your weapon. Roog, are you taking us in? We are still on opposite sides. It's important to remember that.
Roog blinked, the red of the terminal screens reflecting off her green skin as much as Anakin's blade.
I am not taking you in, but I needed to look like I tried.
What are you talking about?
Anakin said, an impatience growing in his tone.
I'm staying here. I am an active guard, but Keeta will identify me as a traitor. My best chance at avoiding execution so I can keep fighting for Neimoidians is to fight you. Roog, you are my friend. I respect your crusade. I do not wish to fight you, Obi-Wan said. If you respect what I stand for, then I need you to face me in battle now.
She lifted the surveillance disabler.
I'm going to turn the surveillance system back on, and then Cator Neimoidia will see me defend the data center. You will overpower me and escape. We need to make it look good.
Obi-Wan had just lectured Anakin about impossible choices. Raising his lightsaber against Rube was yet another one.
I understand. But if we do this, I will be the one. Anakin and the youngling should head to the ship.
Agreed.
Rube looked up and around, presumably at security systems and surveillance cams embedded into the walls, things that only a native Nemoidian with commando training would understand and expect.
You should go, she said to Anakin. I'll catch up,
Obi-Wan said, giving Anakin a nod. Mel, is the way clear?
Yes, Master,
she called out as she perched by the exit.
Let's hurry,
Anakin said. He stepped forward, the tails of his dark tunic whipping out behind him as he moved to the door, only pausing to catch Mel at a standstill. But she wasn't petrified by fear or other people's suffering. Instead, wistful eyes set over a quiet smile on her face.
You're a good person, she said to Roog. I can feel it.
Youngling, I hope you have many years knowing much more than this war.
We will try to make that happen,
Obi-Wan said, pulling out his lightsaber. Anakin took Mill's hand, the security door sliding open to let them out, followed by R2-D2 rolling as fast as possible.
If we see each other again, it may be on the battlefield.
A heavy exhale came from Roog, something that carried enough weight to break her soldier's stance, if just for a second.
If that does happen, then at least it'll be honorable. But let's hope cooler heads are listening.
All Obi-Wan could do at this point was nod.
I am ready. For independence, said Roog, her thumb flicking a side switch on her rifle's grip.
A high-pitched hum came from the weapon, indicating that its firing chamber had hit maximum charge. Obi-Wan flexed his fingers over his lightsaber hilt, then whirled it into a ready position, his right hand high behind him while the blade lay parallel to the floor, the heat from it palpable against his cheeks. His weight rested on his back foot and his left arm extended fully, two fingers out for precise balance. For the Republic. A click sound echoed off the archive walls as Rube reactivated the surveillance system.
Chapter 48, Anakin Skywalker.
Halfway to the shuttle, the alarm sirens rang out across the city. Then came the battle droids.
I guess they saw Obi-Wan, Anakin said.
Mill kept pace as they continued, alley upon alley, block after block. The path, which seemed so free of any resistance not too long ago, now filled with random sprinkles of battle droids, which meant the use of a lightsaber as needed, deflecting blaster bolts and slicing through the opposition. And though it was all necessary, such action seemed to wear at Mill's emotional defenses. He moved with a swift precision, at times more in tune with the currents of the Force than he was even in the arena at Geonosis. Despite the hindrance of his mechanical arm, his lightsaber swung from side to side, tilting from angle to angle, covering from forward to backward, all to protect Mill as they dashed ahead, the volume of battle droids increasing the farther they went. R2-D2 trailed behind, but between the rockets in his legs and some well-timed electrical zaps, the astromech's history of effective movement in combat came through once again. At least until a stray blaster bolt finally caught up with his luck, frying one of his boosters so he could only roll to keep up.
I think we're clear,
Anakin said, leading Mill up and over a building before breaking hard to the side and pointing at a sewer grate. R2-D2 beeped an affirmative, rolling around the building to catch up on the other side, continuing scans for seeker remotes or battle droids. The grate proved heavy, but the combination of adrenaline and force-assisted strength quickly pushed it aside to let Mill drop down. R2-D2 followed, floating down with wobbly single rocket power, and finally Anakin disappeared as well.
With the Force, Anakin pulled at the grate, dragging it back into its place to cover their tracks. They moved quickly, taking advantage of the cover. R2-D2 projected a map that connected the underground passages into segments that brought them close to their ship.
There it is,
Anakin said as they turned the corner, a half-circle of light awaiting them at the end of the tunnel. R2-D2 beeped some directions about what lay ahead, a small drainage waterfall that poured out over a ledge all the way down to the planet's surface. More important, their ship was parked directly above them. After a few calculated force-assisted jumps, the only remaining hurdle would be Obi-Wan's return. Yet something strange awaited them at the end of the tunnel, and it took Anakin several seconds to realize that the low rumble he heard came from a ship hovering at the exit rather than anything to do with the tunnel itself. A strange ship for sure, one with a bulbous front cockpit and a thin line for some sort of tall tail fin.
Wait.
He broke into a crouch, now reaching into the Force to heighten his senses.
Stay behind me, he said,
one arm out to act as a barrier for Mill and the other holding his now lit lightsaber.
Something's not right. I think I've seen that ship before.
As he said that, a mechanized buzz echoed from the hovering craft, and Anakin squinted until he saw that the noise came from the cannon atop the tail fin. And as he adjusted his angle, it became clear that it wasn't just a tail fin, but a half-circle fan blade, the cockpit sitting in the middle. The cannon shifted slightly, and Anakin draped his body over Mill when he realized what was happening. The sound of a single cannon burst quickly became a rumble of breaking duracrete and the clang of falling metal, the bright exit disappearing in an instant. Now trapped in complete darkness, Anakin held his lightsaber in front of him, both a defensive stance and an effort to provide some light, though at this point, his Jedi senses would be of greater use.
I'm okay,
Mill whispered.
I just...
It's you, isn't it? That voice.
It boomed out, ringing through the tunnel. Anakin knew exactly who was speaking. The mystery voice from Obi-Wan's comlink. The question was halfway between cold threat and amused mockery, and his eyes searched the darkness for its origin.
So you're Kenobi's partner.
His instincts called at him to fly forward at the mystery figure, lightsaber swinging. Had he been alone, that might have been an acceptable strategy. But the encounter with Count Dooku on Geonosis lingered in his mind. And while he gripped his lightsaber hilt with both hands, a moment of doubt slipped in. Would his mechanical hand move with the exact blend of precision and power the moment required without any visibility to aid him?
Go to the corner and hide,
Anakin whispered.
Stay out of sight. R2, protect her.
His voice rose to a full shout, loud enough to cover the sound of Mill sneaking off.
We're just passing through. We'll be off planet in minutes. I suggest you step aside as we move that rubble. If,
his eyes scanned for any movement in the black,
you want to live.
Is that a threat?
The woman said with a laugh. It had to be Dooku's agent.
Kenobi I could deal with. He's so polite. But you are more...
As she spoke, Anakin approached, the hum of his lightsaber tracking with his forward movement.
Curious.
His boots stepped with a measured gait, a conscious effort to slow down and stay grounded.
I've dealt with Dooku's minions before.
Oh, I am aware of that.
It's never ended well for them. What makes you think you'll have a better chance than the last one?
The woman's only response was a laugh that rang through the dark. Then nothing.
Then footsteps. Pounding against the stone of the tunnel, whirring by him so fast that he couldn't get a sense of where or how. He swung his lightsaber out, a clear arc in front of him, though it failed to connect. The footsteps continued, rushing in front and behind, all around in a loop up the circular tunnel, and Anakin shut his eyes, letting the Force guide him, telling him where to angle, where to step, where to turn. Both hands gripped his hilt, the flesh of his natural hand working with the mechanics of his gloved limb. He took a split second to think about how to internally calibrate for the difference, but that opening was enough for the steps to stop. A foot ramming him in the gut before two glowing red lines blazed to life. Weapons of the Sith. Anakin's lightsaber swung halfway up, sparks bursting off as the blades pushed against each other. The brilliance of the weapons painted the space, and they fought with each swing meeting another swing, the burning impact creating a storm of flashes throughout the tunnel. His hands held the hilt overhead, advancing with the bright blade ready, looking for an open area to strike. But what this woman lacked in refined technique, she made up for in speed. And they circled each other as they fought, the pop and snap of lightsabers loud enough to bounce off the tunnel's stone walls. You are strong. Count Dooku will be most interested in your progress. She attacked, her blades crossing against his, a test of strength as they pushed against each other. I've already met the Count. He's far less interesting than he seems to think. His mechanical wrist flexed, and he tapped into its innate strength, allowing him to